Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
This is Trevor Young, author of Content Marketing for PR, How to Build Brand Visibility, Influence, and Trust in Today's Social Age. And you are listening to The Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to The Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know, and named by LinkedIn as one of 10 podcasts that will make you a better marketer. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you are a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever you need to learn more about, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat, and I'll do my best to point you in the right direction. I produce this podcast to help me and my listeners keep up with the latest ideas in the quickly changing world of marketing and sales in order to remain successful. My day job is running a marketing agency that helps manufacturers and industrial companies to become better known, liked, and trusted in this modern era of the customer who doesn't want to be marketed or sold to. To learn more about the problems we solve, visit salesartillery.com. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Trevor Young to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his book, Content Marketing for PR, How to Build Brand Visibility, Influence, and Trust in Today's Social Age. Trevor Young, also known as the PR Warrior, is a public relations and communication strategist based in Melbourne, Australia. A former journalist with a long track record in traditional PR, Trevor has worked as a senior consultant with a number of global PR consultancies, and he's established and run his own agencies. And more recently, he was director of strategy and innovation for Edelman Australia. His PR Warrior blog has been listed by both Smart Company and Search Engine Journal as one of Australia's top business blogs. And these days, Trevor heads up Digital Citizen, a consulting, training, and media business that helps brands gain a competitive edge in the marketplace through the use of digital storytelling and content-led communications. And interesting fact, he once had lunch with one of Australia's most notorious criminals, who was also a best-selling author. Trevor, congratulations on Content Marketing for PR, and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you, Douglas. Lovely to be here.
So, I don't think that any of the authors I have interviewed have gone to prison, but maybe a few of them may one day. But that's very exciting that you had lunch with one of Australia's most notorious criminals. Is that something you do often, Trevor?
No, not really. It was part of a he was I'm using air quotes here, a brand ambassador for, he was in some ads for a sunglass company, and we were doing the PR for that brand.
Oh, I see. And did you meet him before he went to prison?
Before
or did you go to the prison and have lunch with him in the canteen?
No. He was out. He'd been out for a little while. He'd spent a lot of his time in jail, but he was out and a free man, and he was an author and just living his life.
I see. Okay. Well, you just makes you more likely to be the most interesting man in the world. So
it was an interesting lunch, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great. Well, listen, I want to start with a couple of quotes from the beginning of the book, and you say, "This book is for anyone who needs to get a story and a message out there. For example, you might be the owner of a growing business, a startup entrepreneur, or a managing partner in a professional services practice. You might lead a charity or a nonprofit and have a cause or issue you need to build advocacy around. You might be a public relations and communications practitioner looking for an edge in your day-to-day work. Or you might just want to get your own story out there. You are the brand. Your business is based on your reputation and the trust people have in your personal brand." And then there's another excerpt where you say, This book is essentially about getting the foundational elements right first before jumping headfirst into pitch mode. Too many businesses blindly focus on the sale. In other words, it's all about them and their products and services. That's all well and good, but it doesn't wash with consumers today. These days, the future belongs to those companies and organizations that take a genuine audience-first approach and that value human connection over commerce. Understanding the latter is often a byproduct of the former. They understand that a key part of marketing today is about leveraging the power of social media and online publishing platforms to be useful, helpful, relevant, and informative to the people who matter most to the success of their business, cause, or issue. So, Trevor Young, why should someone read your book? And why should someone not read your book?
Well, you add that in because that was part of the opening. I was doing myself out of sales if people open the book and say, why is he telling me I shouldn't read the book?
I thought it was brilliant, and my trust in you soared when you said, hey, this book's not a fit for everybody. But why don't you start with that one? Why should someone not read your book? I loved it.
Yeah, well, I think that if, you know, there are types of people and entrepreneurs and that who want to, they want silver bullet solutions to marketing issues. And as we know, you know, marketing is a tough game at the best of times. It's getting harder and harder for multitudes of reasons. And I don't believe there's a silver bullet solution and a one size fits all. And sometimes I think if people are after that quick fix, they'll, you know, if they read this book, they'll get disappointed because it's not the quick fix. It's more for people that want to build, are more interested in sustainable and meaningful communications and to build a brand and a reputation that is sustainable.
Agreed. And I think the people who won't like your book are also the people who want to take a pill and lose 100 pounds overnight. I don't know that that exists, but I see the equivalent of it being advertised all the time.
So, the very same.
Yes. Well, okay. So, why should someone read your book then?
Okay. There's a couple of reasons there. I think if you're wanting to, again, depending on which part of the audience you are, and you know whether you're within the game or whether you're more of an entrepreneur and you run a personal brand based business, I think it's good to get all the information. I'm about developing a philosophy around this space generally, and I think to do that you've got to look at a number of different books and ideas and start finding what's going to work for you, because every brand is unique. It's got their own unique goals, their own people, their own way of doing things. And so what worked for brand A might not work for brand B. So to take in the information and to work out what can I do with this? Is this a way that I want to go philosophically? Am I aligned with this way of thinking? And by doing that, you sort of then start to develop this philosophy of what's going to work for you. Because if you try and jump from, you know, solution to solution to solution, it's really, as you know, it's really easy to do a lot of stuff in this space. But that you can't do everything. So I think that if people sort of read this, and particularly, I guess, if you're, and I make the distinction, we'll probably cover it a little bit with content marketing for PR versus inbound marketing. Mm-hmm. If you think that content marketing, and you've really been going down the inbound marketing side of things, and you just think that that might not be for my brand, but you want to do content and social, then this is, I think, a bookend to that.
Right. And you've got several reasons on there, and you touched on a number of them, but one of them, you said, this book is for you if you are sick of all the noise and hype surrounding content marketing.
That's
and
it.
Social media. So PR, public relations, it's one of those words that means something different to everyone that hears it. So Trevor Young, what the heck is PR?
I won't give you an academic sounding theoretical definition because that won't help anyone.
Let me interrupt Trevor for 1 second. There are a bunch of definitions. Let's talk about Trevor Young's definition.
That's right. I'm going to go down mine, and I keep it pretty simple. How can we deepen the level of connection we have with the people who matter the most to the success of our business, our cause, or our issue? Remember, not everyone in this game in business, they might have a cause or an issue that they're pushing as well.
Yes. So when I started out years ago, the PR folks were very much about media relations, getting ink from all the media gatekeepers. This was before the internet. It was right after the American Civil War. No, I'm kidding. But the media landscape has changed dramatically. So I think there are still a lot of people that think in that old paradigm of, you know, begging or pitching for media coverage. How has PR changed as a result of this changing media landscape?
Well, it has changed and it hasn't changed. So, yes, a lot of people in marketing think that that's what PR is. A lot of people in public relations think that that's what PR is. So it's easy to understand how people get caught up in this, but PR does not stand for press release. It's a part of it, and we call that media relations, and usually media relations is part of a bigger, more strategic communications program. So again, if we looked at who are the people who matter the most to the success of our business or our cause of our issue, that means you've got to map out your audiences accordingly, and then how do you deepen the level of connection with them? So, I mean, I know some PR consultants who hardly ever talk to the media at all, but they're very busy. They're doing so many things. So it could be as simple as, you know, who's an influencer in the space and go and have a coffee with them. If you need to influence someone in government, do you just, you know, have a round table with a number of people? It could be a brand setting up a brand experience zone is often falls under a PR remit. They could be writing white papers. They could be running events. They could be doing roadshows. They could be leveraging a community partnership or a sponsorship. Now, media relations might come into any of those, but again, it's part of a bigger thing. Now, obviously, with social now, how do you build those relationships with your customers and your potential clients, plus the people who influence them? I think that that's where PR also looks. Who are the influencers? And today, of course, the influencers, Douglas, aren't just the media, but they're bloggers and podcasters such as yourself, power tweeters, you know, people who've got a big Instagram following potentially. They're all potential influencers. So we'd kind of look at the end audience and the influencers. The big difference today is that we had used to go to reach our audience, and I've gone through this because I've been in the game for a little while. We used to have to go through the gatekeepers. And yes, the gatekeepers tended to be media in those days. But now we can become our own media channel. Doesn't mean we don't do the media relations. We don't, you know, work with the gatekeepers. It just means we can now do it ourselves. And I think it just doubles the size of what a PR person can do. And I've always said that we now have the tools to do what we should have always been doing
That's
in
right.
the PR game.
Yeah,
so the world's finally caught up with PR. We've now got the tools that we couldn't do, you know, a lot of stuff years ago because, you know, you do a video and it cost you 50 grand. And now, of course, it doesn't cost anywhere near that.
That's true. And PR, like so many other things, well, particularly in marketing, it's just gotten more complicated. You know, the era of easy marketing, as Gary Vaynerchuk once said, is over.
I agree.
Trevor, PR, and I don't know if you lost any friends when you wrote this in your book, but you said PR has an image problem. What is it and why?
Well, it does. And it's kind of, I guess, perpetuated through the media, because the media only see the PR people that they deal with. So that in their minds is what PR is. And Hollywood, of course, any PR person in a Hollywood movie is seen as, you know, slimy, and they don't push them out in the right light often. But you know, there is the notion of spin doctors. And particularly around, you know, government, you got the spin doctors and the people, the media advisors. See, I don't call them PR people. They might advise them on the media, but they're advising them on, let's get this message out to this audience right now. And they you know, there are some old school people in the game who it's kind of like an us and them, and us being, you know, the government or the organisation they represent, and them being the media, and by default, the people, and we'll spin the message to our advantage, versus, you know, strategic, ongoing, open two-way conversation. And there's a big difference between that. So there's nothing wrong with putting your message out in the right light, but I think that sometimes spin gets a little ridiculous, and we know that people don't like it. The people on social media can spot BS a mile off, and so if you try and spin them, they understand it now. They're not silly.
Trevor, as a former New York City Madison Avenue ad man, you use the word slimy like it's a bad thing.
Okay.
I'm kidding. They're not slimy, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And there was also a book and a movie from, 30 years ago called Thank You for Smoking. Written by Christopher Buckley, that was just hilarious. And it was about, in this instance, it was about these three people in Washington, D.C. who represented various trade associations. And it was just, it plays right into the stereotype that you talk about. And one of them represented the tobacco industry, one represented the firearms industry, and the other one represented the distilled spirits, the liquor industry. So, yes, it was just, if you're a PR person, you might still get a kick out of that. Or if you're a new PR person, you might see how things might have been in the past. Now, this book, Content Marketing for PR. So here's the big question I'm going to ask you now, and I'll come back in about 45 minutes and see how you're doing. Trevor Young, how does content fit into the PR equation?
Yeah, 45 minutes might just about do me.
No, I loved the way you did it, because you talked about the human body as it related to
Listen, I think there's a key here, and it's what I've tried to do with the book is put content marketing through a PR lens, and so PR people have been doing content like forever, and because a lot of people in the game have come from journalism as well, like myself, you know, the whole storytelling and writing of content has just been part of it. So when we're now got the opportunity to become our own media channel, of course we're going to be out there doing it. I think the difference is, and the best way to sort of articulate it is that, you know, if we know the inbound marketing, and you know, you've had a lot of guests on in the past who do talk about the inbound marketing side of things, and that's right for some businesses, and it's a very process-driven way of doing things, but it's not right for every business. And again, people who can use content marketing for PR might be a government agency, might be an organisation, a member-based organisation. They're still marketing. They've still got a brand. Or it might be a politician needs more votes. So not everyone needs that end sale. They need a, in air quotes, commercial outcome of sorts. But it's really what's the outcome thereafter. And I think the difference is that I look at with content and PR is it's about building that trust and reputation. I sort of use the word vital, and that stands for visibility, influence, trust, advocacy, and leadership. And they're sort of like five pillars to build under your brand, because today you've got to be visible. If you're not visible and top of mind, then you're going to really struggle. And PR is all about how can you become more known, like trusted, front of mind, and talked about in a positive way. So how can you use content to do all of those things? So visibility, if you can't influence people to take a course of action, then life's going to get a little bit hard, whatever that course of action is. Trust, I think, earned trust is the social currency of today and should be the number one thing that brands are always looking at trying to improve upon. Advocacy is really building, you know, your audience of allies, supporters, enthusiasts for your brand, and those people who are willingly going out and talking about you positively, going to bat for you if you're in a bit of trouble. And leadership is where it starts getting, it's about differentiating your brand, because as we know, a lot of brands now are starting to look the same. And if you look at a lot of content from an inbound marketing perspective, and I call that utility-based content, and very important because no one ever went wrong being useful and helpful, that utility content. But if you're looking at the same avatars all the time and they've got the same pain points and challenges and fears, and you're creating copy content around those issues, which I think is a really good first place to start. But I'm starting to notice that a lot of it is becoming very samey and there's not much difference between them. So leadership is really how can I take a leadership positioning in my marketplace? Now, whether it's a knowledge leadership, a thought leadership positioning, a community leadership positioning, and how can we reinforce that? Because, again, that can help differentiate your brand in the marketplace and the community.
Well, I want to talk about content marketing and inbound marketing. But one thing I did want to ask before we get to that is something that still seems to surprise people when I explain it to them. And there still seems to be this impulse of, you know, no one ever got fired for buying an ad. And on page 26 of your book, you said traditional advertising is fast losing its effectiveness. Some say it's dying. I was happy to hear someone else say it because I'm the one that's been saying it. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, I'm the former ad guy. Trust me, that stuff used to work. It doesn't. What do you explain when you say that traditional advertising is losing its effectiveness and you could argue it's starting to die?
Yeah, it's a couple of things with it. And I'm not saying don't use paid at all. I just think it's how when I see brands default to the paid, just first and foremost, I'm a believer that PR can and content there as a part of PR can help build the base in advance of the advertising and making it work harder. Well, you're spending more money. Let's face it, ad rates don't go down. You're spending more money reaching a smaller audience that's splintered into smithereens that don't care and are blocking you. So that you're interrupting people. They don't want to be interrupted.
And they don't trust advertising.
And they don't trust it, and it's a hard gig. Make no bones about it; it's really hard, and you can't just default to that anymore. Because where I see PR, and then therefore by default content marketing for PR being able to help, is that if you've built that brand that people know, they like, they trust, you're front of mind with your target audience, and you're being talked about in a positive way in the marketplace, then when you advertise, at least people know you. At least there's this affinity with you. But if you just do cold, how many times are you, even at a Facebook level, you see ads come out from people, and I've never heard of you. You're just interrupting me. What's going on? I know, hard to believe, isn't it? But imagine if you've been creating content and you've built that sort of brand and reputation in advance, and then the ad hits. Then you might take notice if you, oh, this is an interesting brand, or you know, this is something that I'm interested in. These guys seem to be doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah, so at least there's top of mind. I mean, it's really hard. And I just think the default position today, straight to advertising, again, every brand's different, so I have to generalize here. There are, you know, FMCG and that, where probably the advertising is probably the most effective. But ultimately though, if that's your default, I just think it's going to get a lot harder. It's not going to get easier. It's not going to get easier. You're going to spend more money and you're going to splinter your message more times to reach an audience that's utterly fragmented, who don't care about you and they're blocking you anyway.
Amen, Brother Trevor. And let me tell you something. If traditional advertising still worked, the Marketing Book podcast host would still be doing it. So think about that. So let's talk about, okay, content marketing. Explain what content marketing is and inbound marketing. And I guess more importantly to me, why did you feel compelled to explain the difference?
Well, my definition of content marketing is really about creating and publishing in a strategic way, creating and publishing and amplifying content that's of interest and relevance and value to a specific audience with the ultimate goal of influencing a desired outcome. That's what I mentioned earlier. Whereas with inbound marketing, it's very much about the lead and the sale. And that's the focus from the get-go. My thing, and the funnel, that whole thing. My thing is a little bit, what about before the funnel? What about, I think trust and reputation are the two key drivers today are two key drivers of commerce. And in a world where consumers aren't trusting, then having a reputation that is trusted is like putting a moat around your brand. and between you and your competitors. But you can't buy that. You have to earn it. You have to earn it over time, and you have to reinforce it and keep it and maintain that reputation. So that's the hard part. But we want to, you know, we want to do business with brands we trust and that have got a trusted reputation. And so I think that if content marketing can do that, and I might talk in a minute about what I call leadership content, but if we can, it's not, again, it's not an either or, and it depends on the type of business you run. But there, it's almost, and again, it's part of your philosophy, but I know that, you know, there are some businesses and the funnel's not working for them, but if they build a thought leadership positioning in the marketplace, they get leads and then they get sales. I know of one big brand in Australia that they measure brand love because they know that when they do their research, and this is a very big brand, when they do their research and that brand love score goes up, then they make more sales. There's a correlation. And so how can you then use content to build that brand love score? So it's really what are the things that lead to the sale versus necessary and pave the way in advance of. And I don't think we talk about that as often because it often gets down to the leads and sales at the end. And yes, we know that.
Yes.
But what are the forerunners to that being known, like trusted, front of mind, and talked about in a positive way are forerunners and having a trusted reputation. Again, that's my philosophy. Not everyone agrees with that. And ultimately, it does depend on your type of business as well.
Well, it seems like there's a fair amount of overlap between inbound marketing, content marketing. And for somebody who's listening to this, they may think that these are two guys that are splitting hairs. But
yeah, fickle.
I could understand what you're talking about. What made me want to ask that question is, do you find a lot of confusion between the two? Or do people who talk to you think, oh, you're an inbound marketing guy? Or, oh, you know, is that the problem?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's true. And this didn't just dawn on me. This has happened over a period of time that I was starting to get frustrated, even just with the conversation around content marketing, because I'd read everything possible. And virtually everything that I read, 95%, was very much focused on inbound marketing. We had SEO people writing it. We've had SEO people writing about PR. I mean, you know, it was just so much noise. And over a period of time, it was becoming very obvious to me that, hang on, we've been doing content for a very long time, but we do it in a different way. And yes, there are absolutely there are overlap. There's overlap in every part of marketing today, Douglas.
Yeah.
And there is overlap, and there's no doubt about that. But the distinctions I make, if I might talk about, I talked about the utility content and where inbound marketers are really focused on those pain points, and they zero in on those pain points and those challenges and the most frequently asked questions and the information gaps people have. And I think that's a really great place to start. And a truism across both content marketing for inbound and PR is you know your audience and understand your audience. So that's where there is certainly overlaps and truisms. But the thing with that is that over a period of time, you get that out of the road. If you know, I work with some clients and, you know, I was working with one the other day and they had three avatars. We still go through that. And there was probably 50 to 60 real big issues for them, quite challenging issues that they had. And we're now doing a video for each one of those. So that's your baseline. Just get that out of the road. That's where most businesses won't even do that. So if you do that, you're already in front of your competitor. But that's just the starting point. Your next layer up is what I call leadership content. And this is where it starts to this is where it starts veering more towards a PR route. And your leadership content is more bigger picture, it's more thought-provoking, it's maybe trends-driven. It's actually not something that consumers or people or your audience actually know about potentially. People don't know what they don't know. And sometimes, you know, you're not helping them with a problem or an issue. You might be provoking thought or trying to change the way they think about a topic or an issue. You might be actually metaphorically poking them in the eye. And so that's not an inbound marketing thing. So I look at the classic example of this is Seth Godin. Mm-hmm. Now, Seth's one of the best bloggers going, has for many, many years. He's not sitting there answering people's questions. He's poking and prodding and changing the way you think about a topic. And so there's a lot of, you know, the Edelman Trust Barometer to me is a classic leadership content play because it elevates them out of the norm of other PR firms and it has heavy research that they can use. So the Edelman Trust Barometer is a great example. Even in consumer land, it's in Australia, we have a company that makes wallets, really good wallets called Bellroy. And they publish an online magazine called Carryology. And that's about all things carry. So they've sort of created this term carry. So wallets, bags, luggage, that side of things. Do you know what they do in this online publication, Douglas? They promote the heck out of their competitors.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah.
So,
well, it gives them more credibility, I would think.
Heaps of credibility, you know, like heaps of credibility. I know you've had Marcus Sheridan on in the past, and he, you know, and I've known his story
pretty well.
Who
I just thought of, yeah.
Yeah, and his was, and he's very much the utility content, right? Really much. But he also mentions his competitors as well in the past. He's done that. But this is,
he does
this
it on
is,
his website. He has. I love that
example.
I think
it's smart.
We even did it on ours. Yeah. If you're looking for a marketing firm in our area, you type in the region and marketing firms. We're the first on Google. And there's 60 firms on there, but yet we're dominating. But we're being utility. We're being helpful. Right. Yeah, and what he did was he said, he vowed to answer every question he ever got from a customer. Mm. And they once said, Marcus, we like you, but if we didn't hire you, who are the other pool firms here in Richmond, Virginia? And he said, man, I don't want to answer that. But now if you type in Richmond, Virginia pool companies, guess who's first in Google?
That's right. I think it's smart. With Bellroy, it's a little different because they're looking at the whole carry, you know, the whole category of carry and mm-hmm. wallets and bags. So if you're interested in really good wallets, you're probably interested in great backpacks and courier bags and that sort of stuff. So, and luggage. So by promoting the bigger category, they seem to be a leader in part of that. And so they're growing the pie and they're part of the pie. So they grow with it. So
right.
It's a really smart, if counterintuitive, look at stuff. So that's sort of, I would call that leadership from a consumer brand. But when you do then start get into more the B2B or the, you know, like the Edelman Trust Barometer or, you know, Mary Meeker's Internet Trends document, is a classic example. But it's not just, you know, big research type things. Patagonia talks about, you know, they use their voice and their audience to advance the climate crisis issue. Mm-hmm. That to me is a leadership content play. And so this is where it starts becoming different, because this is really what PR people have always done, is that if there is an issue that a brand is behind, then now you can use the content, become your own content, your own media channel to advance that cause if you're a brand that has a cause or an issue that you want to get out there as well. So there's sort of like there's some of the little bit of difference. The other sphere, it's sort of like four concentric circles. So you've got utility content, leadership content. Then I have what I call corporate content. It's a really lousy word, but I haven't got any other. It works for bigger organizations, but not so much for the little guy. But if you look at corporate content, every major organization puts out press releases. Whether those press releases work or not, it's another matter. They do the rounds of the organization. 20 people chip in. The press release is pretty much rendered meaningless by the time it gets to the media.
Yes.
And then once legal's had a crack at it, then all the story has been taken out of it. I'm being a little facetious there. But the fact of the matter is that you will never stop a major organisation putting out press releases, and it's archived. And if you're a public company, you have to do that anyway. And you've put out press release, we're doing this, we just announced this, whatever, put it out there, do whatever you have to do. But then use content to tell the story behind the story. You know, if you've got a new product, that, you know, the press release will be out there championing it and the ad will be out there doing whatever. Spend a little bit of time maybe doing some interviews with the product designer, for example. Take people behind the scenes of the business. Take people behind the public face of the business. Again, how do you build trust? Transparency. We want to see people. We want to see the whites of their eyes. We want to see the leaders out there on social channels.
I have a friend, a PR practitioner, and she was telling me, it was just earlier this year, she said she does all these things that are in the book. But there's like a few people on the board of directors, I guess you could say they're sort of old school. And the only thing they want to know about is, was there a news release? Was there a press release? So pretty quickly, she puts a press release out. That's the only thing they want to know. Meanwhile, she's off doing all these other things. It's like she's sneaking effective PR into the organization. But yes, sir, I checked that box. We did, in fact, have a news release. That's great.
You're not going to win that battle. You're not going to win that battle. And just going back on that leadership content a bit, it's not just big organizations, but a mutual friend of ours, Mark Schaefer, terrific author, just love his blog, love his work, always have. And, if you look back at the one article that people might remember is the content shock article, yes. Right? So, when I said before about poking people in the eye and prodding them and thought-provoking them, that wasn't an easy read if you're a marketer. That wasn't an easy read. Like that was like being smacked in the face with a dead fish. And so he's not sitting there looking at their pain points. This was this was an issue that was nagging him, and he got it out there, and it went absolutely nuts and did, it does a lot for him. He's not sitting there looking at trying to shove people down a funnel. He's putting out content that differentiates him in the marketplace. He's putting out content that stimulates conversation and ignites debate. And by default, he is seen to be leading that debate, and that helps build his reputation as a thought leader. So I just wanted to make that distinction because, yes, the big organizations can do it and do it. Your IBMs, they all GE is a classic example. GE is fantastic for taking people behind the scenes mm-hmm. of the organization, just doing some brilliant stuff across their social channels and for such a major far-flung organization. And that to me is the content marketing for PR because yes. it's ticking PR boxes about, those visibility, influence, are we building trust, advocacy, employee advocacy too. The other thing is if you want to become an employee brand or an employer of choice, then that's what PR does as well. So there's no right or wrong. There's lots of gray. And then sort of see if you start developing your own philosophy around this stuff, you start working through a path of what's noise and what's not.
Yes, and you, as it relates to corporate content, Trevor Young, you made me laugh in this book. There was this one quote I just loved. He said on page 97, so he really did say this, progressive PR practitioners need to transform the corporate content from the typically chest-beating crap it probably is into something that has the potential to engage the audience. And then I think if I were going to make a joke, I would probably mark that and say, Trevor, you say chest-beating crap like it's a bad thing, just like Slimy earlier in the interview. But, you talk, you mentioned Mark Schaefer, and he is the king of the Marketing Book podcast. He's been on more than anyone else. And I say king in an Elvis way, not in a British monarchy way. But that article he wrote, which I think was in January 2014, and when you're the host of the Marketing Book podcast, you remember really useless trivia like that. It's taking up such a hard drive space in my brain that I can't remember the names of friends and relatives. But he got over 1,000 blog comments off of that article about content shock. And he's like when he writes a book, he's like a Blues Brothers on a mission from God. He won't rest until he figures something out and writes a book about it. That led to the book, The Content Code. And I wanted to ask you about the importance of amplifying the content you publish. Explain what that is. And what puzzles me is why it's still so overlooked. In other words, publishing content is really the starting gun, but so many organizations think it's the finish line.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you're doing really good content, you want to get the value out of it. You want to extract it. So there's two parts to that. There is one is getting the content out there and amplified, and there are multitudes of ways of doing it, and we won't have time to go through them all. But I think on one hand, if you've got you know, some chunky content. How do you repurpose that and lead people back to the bigger stuff? You know, that's not news, but it's a lot of people don't do it. And because it takes effort, you know, if you're going to do a podcast or a video series or a white, you know, if you could do a white paper, for example, yes, do the written white paper and then take the chunks out of it and spread it all out. That's probably 50 bits of content for social media. Why not do an audio version of the white paper? Let people listen to it. Why not do a series of videos interviewing the authors of the white paper and taking us behind the story of the white paper, for example. So even in your planning, you can do things differently as well as repurposing. So you can add value, add another dimension and add value, but that gives you other things to promote. And then that's when paid amplification comes in. If you're building your organic reach, and you've got an engaged audience of people who really like you, again, that's a more sustainable way. It's not either or. It's that combination of things.
Yes. Was there one person in the book here who was talking about you should spend like 80% of your time? You said there's a continuum, but somebody who said you should spend 80% of your time promoting the content, meaning take whatever time it takes to produce it, but the really effective content marketers pay more and more attention to getting it out there, even if you have to use some paid to promote it. But I think people don't realize that, you know, if you build it, they won't come. There's so much more that you have to do now to get it found. Well, speaking of that, talk about why blogging is so important. I mean, come on, Trevor Young, isn't that kind of passe? Isn't that on the outs? I mean, seriously, you said that your blog should become the heart of your online content efforts. Explain that.
Yes, your digital heart. I call blogging the traditional social media. It's like traditional media, but it's been around for so long. And it feels a little old hat, doesn't it? I mean, it's even the word blog is just, a, you know.
Yeah, what's the problem with the word blog? I really try to avoid using it because it seems to make people think it's, I don't know, grown men living in their mother's basement wearing pajamas and
Exactly. If I'm talking with corporates, I tend to say a content hub, dynamic content hub.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference, and I think I look at if your kind of your website is kind of like your suit and tie, and that's your more buttoned down part of your image, you can let loose a little bit and take the tie and the jacket off when you're writing your blog, and it allows people to go behind the scenes a little bit. So we talked a bit before about, I'm just trying to think what we did talk about. I'm going to backtrack on that. But the thing is that it allows you to go behind the scenes a little bit.
Yeah.
It allows the CEO to drop in and do a story. If you've got a story in, you know, if they do an opinion piece in a magazine or a newspaper, they can drop back in and you know, you can repurpose it and rewrite it for the blog. But a blog can also be quite handy if we look at crisis management, for example. If you've already got a blog that's up and running and it's got an audience and you've got, you know, a bit of SEO juice and things are pumping for it and it's your repository of all your good content, then you know, when the brand stuff hits the fan, as it sometimes will, then you're in a better position than those that haven't got a blog. So an example I give in the book is Buffer. Now, Buffer is one of the earlier social media scheduling tools. And what's the worst thing that can happen to a social media scheduling tool? It gets hijacked or hacked and starts sending out on behalf of its clients, not just Buffer, but Buffer's clients, big companies. I think they were spammy diet pill promotions, then that's probably the worst position that a social scheduling tool can be in. And because Buffer's been one of the best that I've ever seen at content marketing, they already had, you know, this enthused audience and they had a blog that was really operating. So the moment that crisis hit them, Joel Gascoigne, the CEO, was on the front foot. He said, this is the issue we're facing. He blogged about it. He kept updating the blog. They were updating people on the back channels as well. But the blog was the main piece where everything happened. And they were, bang, we're on this. We're fixing this. 3 hours later, we're doing this. And so they used it in real time. And that became the place where everyone went to find out what the issue was. And the main thing is now is that they came out of that stronger, whereas that would have knocked most brands you know, into oblivion. They came through that stronger. And when I Googled it, his story came up the first. When I, you know, Googled buffer hacking or whatever it was, his article on the blog came up number one. And a lot of the other blog posts were about how well that I found on Google, how well Buffer had handled that issue. And so that's an example, and there are a couple of others, but that's an example of by having that blog that you've been building, it's a mindset as well that you're putting all that content through, and you know, you're continuing to update people. So it can work in a crisis management, but you know, as Mark Schaefer will attest, blogging's probably been the number one thing for him because that's the starting point for everything else.
Yes, you know, and for David Merriman Scott as well, who I just recently
absolutely interviewed. Absolutely. So it's kind of, but it's also the mindset. If you want to share and connect with your audience, a blog is a really good place to start because you can tell your stories, you can take people behind the scenes, you can add video and add your audio, and it's a combination of everything. But that's what I was going to say before we went back to press releases and that side of things. Bigger companies have digital newsrooms. And I think a blog plus a digital newsroom is a really good combination because you can put all your, you know, your media releases and all that's all your other stories and your more buttoned down stuff in your digital newsroom, but use your blog to tell your more human stories and to take right. people behind the scenes a little bit more. So that was kind of what I was trying to get at, the differences between the two. Again, either or, they work better in combination.
Well, and also you own the content on your blog, and you go into great detail explaining why, you know, the pros and cons of building a house on rented land, putting things on social media, but you own that blog content. And I just love the term, it's the digital heart of your online content efforts. And I'm a big believer, but you know, blogging works really well, and so does email marketing, but they're not the hottest. They don't seem as cool as whatever the kids are following these days, like TikTok or something. But the blog is a wonderful explanation of why it's so important. And I appreciate you stating it because I almost wonder if a lot of people think, oh, everyone understands that, but no. But let's move on to a couple other things that I just think are so important for folks to understand. Talk about the benefits of using video and maybe why more organizations aren't using it.
Yeah, I mean, video helps you see the whites of their eyes, doesn't it? And again, getting your leadership out there, getting your experts. If you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer, and for year upon year upon year, the most trusted sources of information and the most credible sources of information from a company or an organization are internal company experts or external independent third-party experts like academics. So can you bring them into the fold? Can you use video to bring them to life a little bit more and get them out of the shadows of the cubicle? Conversely, the CEO has never been really a trusted source of information, although they're faring better in recent years than they have been previously. But that means you've got to double down to get them out there. And video just helps build that trust, I think. Again, I'm a massive podcasting fan. I'm a written word fan, and I really love video. A friend of mine the other day, she did a poll on LinkedIn. I think she got about 500 and something responses. How do people like, what sort of content format do they like looking at on LinkedIn? And by far was the written word, like 70% compared to video, which was about 20-25%.
Oh, really?
Which was really interesting. It was really interesting, and she's got a lot of publicity over that. Now, it's not massive, robust research, but it really is a little signal that, okay, well, we do hurtle straight, and I'm as guilty as anyone. We hurtle straight to video, but there's room for, you know, the humble written word. And but I think video needs to be part of, because some people like video, some people will take the information in written words. So I think if you look at your audience, they take information in, they consume information and content in different ways. And I think video, but again, that you can break video down in a million ways. You've got the big budget.
Yes, actually, Trevor, I want you to go even further there, because there was an interesting part in the book where you talk about these corporate, very, you know, somewhat slickly produced CEO videos. and didn't get much traffic, didn't get many views, and yet like two guys from the same company went off to a conference and used their iPhones to record what they were finding and learning. Massive followership. It just seemed like it was more believable. It was but an interesting contrast there. I think people are a little less trustful of these sort of talking head into the teleprompter site type things instead of somebody just sitting at their desk holding an iPhone up, explaining something.
100%. I'm a big believer in that. I mean, there's room to do the on-the-fly sort of video sort of stuff and the in-the-moment and even, gosh, live stream.
Yeah, and you refer to that as social reporting.
Yeah, I think that, well, social reporting really means if you think about it, you're a big organization, you embedded a, in quotes, journalist, they don't have to be a journalist, but someone who has journalistic capability and story, can uncover a story, and they're actually telling the stories of the organization across social media and live streaming and photos and videos and all of that sort of stuff, then that just all of a sudden elevates your business in terms of getting some interesting stuff out there. And that's really great for, you know, employees, potential employees. You've got to have a mindset of being wanting to connect with your audience, wanting to be open and transparent. Doesn't mean you take people into the, you know, into the war room where you're designing a new product for release. But it just means that four really big banks. Our financial services in Australia are dominated by four big banks, and one is the ANZ. And Shayne Elliott is the CEO of the ANZ. So you imagine, you know, they employ 50,000 people. It's not as big as the American banks, but very, very big anyway. And he uses social media. He's got a Facebook page. He's big on. He loves Twitter. He takes people behind the scenes. We're on the tram going to a meeting. I'm out there, out and about in the suburban branches. I've just met a young guy whose father was in the bank and his grandfather was in the bank, that sort of thing. And he's just humanizing, you know, as a leader, he's humanizing the bank, what he does, and taking people behind the scenes a little bit. And that's kind of like that social reporting type thing, that in the moment. And sometimes the videos can be really good like that. I've seen Shayne do videos and he's wearing these daggy clothes and he's wearing a pink T-shirt because they had an internal event to launch something, a new initiative. And then he just pops up in front of the camera, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's pretty noisy around him, but it's that in the moment that really works. So there's times to do that. There's times if you're going to do a roadshow, you need a video that's going to be a little more polished and schmick. Mm-hmm. And there's everything in between. And I think we've got to, again, we've got this in our arsenal. How do we put all of these great tools to, how do we use these great tools to get our story out there and our message, but in a way that's interesting and human and that we can connect and resonate with people?
Just a couple more things I want to ask you about that I just know the listeners are going to find helpful is, and again, we're not doing justice to it, full disclosure, there's lots here, it's 360 pages. The thing I want to ask about is search engine optimization, or SEO.
Yep.
And it's been a mainstay of digital marketing, but only in more recent times have we seen SEO, as you say, snuggle up to the discipline of public relations. What are the elements of PR and SEO that are jointly affected by the content you produce?
Right. So, well, when it comes to SEO and PR, particularly, I'm starting to see a little bit in the US, but very much in the UK, we have PR firms that are buying SEO companies. And SEO, when it comes to PR, is that earned media. So if you get a backlink, you get a story up in BBC, CNN, New York Times, or a university, or a .edu, and that link goes back to your website or your content, then that's very much what that's the PR and that's where SEO and PR work together. And we're seeing there's a bit of movement on that front. Again, that's if that's right for your business. The other part of it is SEO for reputational. So in digital marketing, you might have, I'm going to be doing this at a really basic level, but, you know, if you're a dog walker in, I don't know, a part of Chicago, I could say some obscure Australian town and won't mean anything. But you're in a part of Chicago. You're a dog walker, and you know you've got all your SEO keywords of, you know, Chicago dog walking, you know, this suburb, et cetera, et cetera. Then that's that digital marketing side. And then what are the keywords and what are people searching for? So the content marketing for PR doesn't go near that. That's you do that anyway if that's right for your business. But if going back to that leadership side of things, if you are wanting to put some reputational flags in the ground, what do you want to be known for as a business, as a brand, and put those flags in the ground on those topics and those issues that are really important to your business and the industry in which you operate in, and maybe the community in which you operate in. Then if you're doing that, then you can do SEO around those terms as well, because that means also, what about when journalists are trying to find experts in a space, and this is where it snuggles up, using that word snuggles up, that phrase, snuggles up to the media side of things. There's less journos now. They're putting out more content than ever before quickly. They have to move. They need trusted source and credible sources of information. And obviously, Google is often their friend. Now, Twitter's often their friend as well, but Google is their friend. And so they're doing a lot more desk research. So if you come up as an expert in your space around certain key issues, then you might elevate yourself to the top of their list. And so there's that side of things. I know of people that have blogged. A good friend of mine, he's in the law side of things, but the financial law. And he once wrote on an issue. He put it out there. He blogged about it, and then four trade journals picked it up. Now, I don't think he was doing SEO, but they did pick his stuff up. So, but you can then use SEO if you want to do that more as a long-term venture. What are those areas we want to be known for? And let's give a little bit of be a little bit SEO friendly around those reputational issues,
right,
for
well,
example. So
actually,
that's where PR is probably going to differ a little bit.
That leads to the last thing we really have time to talk about was, you know, owned media. Remind listeners how owned media can actually lead to editorial exposure. You started to touch on it there with your friend who's the financial attorney publishing a blog post that then gets picked up.
Well, that was right with him. It certainly did get picked up. In fact, thinking back now, I think that was more LinkedIn than SEO. I'd give an example in the book about a guy called Greg Savage, who runs a terrific name blog called The Savage Truth. And he's a brilliant blogger. And one of his articles got picked up 2 years later by Huffington Post, correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. And it went absolutely nuts and got, you know, hundreds of thousands of views, and he got interview opportunities all over the place. And that's just a one-off there. Another example is a doctor in Australia who has her own blog, wrote an article, and it was around a controversial issue at the time in Australia, and that got picked up by the mainstream media, and they published it, the story, and they took it, you know, that went into radio and other blogs covered it, and so what was originally on her blog ended up being amplified around the place because the media picked up on that story and ran with it. So, I mean, that can work at an industry level, but sometimes you might have to pitch. You might be able to attract them, which I guess is an inbound, but there might also be times when I've got this good story, I want to pitch it out, and then you tell, you know, the trade journal that covers your industry, I've just written this blog, do you want to syndicate it?
Right. Well, and it may seem like a subtle difference to some, but just start with the blog, back to the blog, back to your own media. It's really interesting when some article that I've written gets picked up by the media, or like even for a client where we're publishing information on their blog, and next thing we know, the television stations start calling. It doesn't always happen, but do it in that order, and it happens for these big and small companies.
Don't you think, Douglas, that the whole thing of blogging, though, is a mindset? Again, you've got to want to share. You either want to connect with your audience or you don't. There is no halfway. And you either do it properly or you don't. So by putting that blog out, and I mean, I've gone through that. I started a blog in 2007. Now, I was known in my industry, but I wasn't known in broader business circles. But the moment I started blogging and getting on social media, then the media came to me, and then all of a sudden I'm on TV and radio and print and everything. It's the same thing. Because, but it's not one thing. It's
a mindset that leads to success now. Whereas I think that people, I don't know, I still see people who, or companies where they're thinking, well, no, let's pitch it to the media. No, of course you can pitch to the media, but don't wait for them. Put it on your blog and go from there. So I don't know. That's why some may not quite understand that, but it's true. What we're masking here is that there's an attitude of wanting to share and inform and educate or maybe entertain. So Trevor Young, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I think that there's just that there's more than one way to do content marketing. Again, I mentioned earlier, there are truisms across everything, but looking at content through a different lens might be right for your business. Don't just necessarily look for the cookie cutter approach, but you know, ask yourself, can content play a bigger game, help us play a much bigger game than what we're playing now as a brand?
Absolutely.
And so just looking at content in a different way.
Yes. And this is, one of those books that I spoke to my local Public Relations Society of America recently. They wanted me to do a talk about podcasting, and so they allowed me in. But
they allowed you out as well.
And they let me out as well. That's right. No, they were very, very nice. But this is one of the books that the folks need to read. So, in other words, this book, if you don't mind me saying so, it needs to go with Spin Sucks by Jenny Dietrich. It needs to go with Crisis Ready.
Terrific book. Terrific.
Yeah, by Melissa Agnes. And so those three, I think, would be, you know, it's like when I meet some of these PR folks, I just get the sense sometime that they're still living in the world of keeping a Rolodex, and I mean a real Rolodex, with it has the business card stapled to it. Yeah. And doing press releases. And it's just, it's changed. And I can remember some years ago, I met with a friend or an acquaintance with another friend, and he had just been fired from his PR job. And all he could talk about was, oh, I've got all these contacts at the media. And I just remember thinking, who's still there? And, you know, there's so much more that you as a PR person should be doing rather than thinking you know who these media contacts are, and that leads to a whole nother story. So what is one thing a listener could do today to put in action one of the ideas from your book?
I think if you're wanting to differentiate your brand a little bit, I think start looking at the leadership content side of things, and how can we, yes, understand our audience, but how can we use content to play a bigger game? As a brand, even at a community level, are you supporting some issue or some community group, or you're sponsoring something, or, you know, you want to be involved in a bigger conversation? What is that conversation? Why don't you start? It doesn't matter. Just start on your socials. Social media is all about the content. Once you start talking content, you talk social media. So maybe it's just, you know, we're going to use LinkedIn to put out some heavier content that's around, you know, bigger picture themes to do with our industry, for example, if that's right for you. Or if we are supporting a local issue, we may have done one tweet. Well, maybe we do a little bit of an interview with the organization, and we take people behind the scenes, and we use our channels to promote someone else that's relevant to us.
Great.
And so just taking that next layer up and just thinking a little bit broader with your content around a leadership positioning.
So Trevor, what books have most inspired your work and career?
You mentioned his name earlier, David Meerman Scott. The New Rules of Marketing and PR. I've still got the original one that came out in about 2007.
Yes, the year you started that's the year you started your blog, right?
Yeah, it was very important. And he was a guy that was sort of, I'd been sort of studying this area, and wow, this is what I'm thinking. This is fantastic. So, you know, we've had a relationship going back those many years with David, but he's just put out, I think, the seventh edition of that. And that's obviously, it's a very different book today than what it was back in 2007.
Yes,
remember Second Life.
I just interviewed about the seventh edition, and that's one of the two books that have had the biggest impact on my career.
Yeah, it's a good book because it's not hysterical. It's very matter of fact, and it puts the audience first. But it's you know, it's all the things that I talk about. He's been covering as well, and that's why I love reading his stuff and his blog. The other one is the Clue Train Manifesto, goes back to 2000. The book was released. I think they did the 95. I think theses. I think a thesis is just one line. Theme, and they published that, I think, in 1999, and the book came out in 2000. And of course, this is before social media. Mm-hmm. And the things they were saying, you know, when we were talking before about media and stuff like that, one that's burned in me, one of their theses is, we, the people, want you, the organization, to take us more seriously than that one reporter with the Wall Street Journal. And that's just burned in me. And I think that's it. Does it mean you don't take the journalists seriously? Of course not. That's part of what you do. But also take the people seriously and communicate with them directly. And that's still the biggest opportunity. And these guys saw this back in 2000, 1999. I mean,
just amazing. Amazing. It's the prescience.
And I think, absolutely. And marketers should read that now because it's as fresh today. In fact, I'm going to go back and reread it, I reckon. I got it out again last year, but I reckon it's as fresh today and as relevant and thought-provoking. It's a subversive work.
Mm-hmm. A landmark book. So are there any recent or upcoming books that you recommend or are looking forward to reading?
Yeah, I'm reading one. When I say reading, I'm listening to this one, a book called The Passion Economy by Adam Davidson, and the subtitle is The New Rules for Thriving in 21st Century. So obviously, if you got new rules in the title, I'm going to buy it.
But
he's talking. I think Adam's with NPR, Planet Money, potentially. Behind that, he's a great storyteller, and if you love, he's getting his point across through brilliant stories, really interesting stories. But it's more about, you know, moving away from mass market commoditization and channeling our passions, hence the title of The Passion Economy, channeling our passions and interests into more smaller specialty products and services for niche markets.
Interesting. I was not aware of that book. I appreciate you.
Yeah, it's just out. So I haven't completely, I'm just into it, but I'm really loving his style and, you know, the NPR style, that more narrative. And he's reading it, so it's really good. I haven't got into it completely yet, but it's got my attention really quickly.
Well, good. Well, at marketingbookpodcast.com, we'll include links to your sites and your social media and your LinkedIn profile and all of the books that you've mentioned. Everything that's linkable, we'll put there so listeners can find out more. And hopefully, I hope they'll connect with you and thank you for joining us on the show. And for you, dear listener, if you are listening on your smartphone and you've subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on your favorite podcast app, all these links can be found by going to this episode and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is Content Marketing for PR, How to Build Brand Visibility, Influence, and Trust in Today's Social Age. The author is Trevor Young. Trevor, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Douglas.
And that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. I hope you found it helpful. If you are one of the hundreds of listeners who have left an iTunes review, I really appreciate it and would like to return your kind favor by mailing you a thank you note and include a Marketing Book Podcast bookmark and laptop sticker. Just message me on LinkedIn, your mailing address, anywhere in the world, and I'll drop it in the mail. And if you'd like to record a question that could be played and answered on a future episode, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree